Good evening. Welcome to the Solaire Report. Today is October 17, 2013. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Another upcoming event, October 29th, we're going to have lunch with Catherine. Subscribers in San Francisco, California, you can sign up on the blog. I'll be meeting with subscribers after a speech I give that morning at the Appraisal Symposium in San Francisco. The topic is What's Next? Primary trends in the global financial markets and the impact on San Francisco Bay Area real estate. Our theme tonight is helping each other come clean over the fiscal cliff. We've had quite a 2 weeks watching Congress debate the budget issues, particularly as they relate to Obamacare. This is just the beginning. This is tiny compared to many of the similar challenges we're going to have over the next 2 years as we try and reconcile the budget issues. The gap between the popular understanding of what's happening and the media spin and reality are extremely wide. The House Republicans understand the dangers of the current, the proposed Obamacare healthcare policy. They tried to do something about it. They did not shut the government down. The House Republicans sent appropriations that the administration could have used to fund everything but Obamacare. The administration refused to proceed without funding for Obamacare. It is very often that programs are authorized and then appropriations are not provided for them, although clearly a big political issue when the program is this big. But it was the administration that shut the government down, insisting on Obamacare, not the House Republicans. The polls indicate there was not widespread support for the House Republicans. What that means is that we, the people, have now bought into a fascism that is going to roll down on us with a mighty force. The problem is that most people really don't understand what's coming. If you want to understand Obamacare, read the comments by subscribers on the blog. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. I am republishing on the blog the Fiscal Cliff article. It very much sort of talks, it opens with a story about a family with irreconcilable differences, and the solution always is to blame their advisors when they can't reconcile the differences for them and just keep turning over at the advisors. And in fact, that's what we're now seeing in the body politic. Rasmussen polls say 78% now want to throw out the entire Congress and start over. Polls on Yahoo Finance this week indicated 60% of the voters said, of the voters surveyed, said they would not vote for their congresswoman or man who is an incumbent. My congresswoman is one of the House Republicans, Marsha Blackburn. She is an incumbent. I assure you, not only am I going to vote for her, I'm going to give her money. But that's clearly not what the majority of Americans are saying. 82% of Democrats wanted the shutdown to end. 71% of GOP said keep it going, interestingly enough. So the tensions you're watching represent real tensions within the body politic, and more than anything, it represents an absence of understanding of what's really going on in the budget. We're going to keep running the Fiscal Cliff article in bits through the blog, day after day and week after week. It's a big piece, but I can't tell you what a big difference it would make for consciousness if we were all to really understand the deep structural issues there. So I hope it's helpful. Money and markets. I've been on the road quite a bit. I've been in Missouri, and then I was in Salt Lake City, and then I was in Reno and San Francisco, and then Tucson, and then back to San Francisco, and then in Boulder, and now back to San Francisco. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what I learned on the road. Balancing the budget in this country is not about making tough choices. It's about the reinvention of everything. We have numerous processes where you can't just cut to change things. You have to reinvent. And part of the challenge is, how do we reinvent when, in fact, the goal of the budget is to subsidize certain sectors, but to make sure you have top-down control? Because top-down control is very inefficient. It's very wealth destroying. It's very painful. I keep promoting a framework to help people understand the bigger picture, because too many people are falling into the trap of believing we're going to have a collapse. Watch Just a Taste this week. It's a 2 to 3 minute little audio video. It's up on the up on the blog on the left-hand side, and Justin Bolden, our audio-video producer, has done a great job of capturing in a few minutes what the basic issue of the legacy systems versus the money that's been shifted over and is being reinvested. It's a framework that I think is very important to help you understand what's going on. Very, very few people have this framework. The Salieri Report subscribers, I think, are some of the few that really get this outside of the intelligence agency. So I would encourage you to watch that and kind of take that framework like a hat, and as you walk around the world, see how it fits. Behind the choices that need to be made in the reinvention of everything, there is force. Force is what is running the system. It's why the Congress does not represent the people, in addition to needing to finance their campaigns, and so being dependent on people who give money as opposed to necessarily vote. You have we have a group of people who are running things who have the power to kill with impunity. Watch Stanley Kubrick's last movie, Eyes Wide Shut. It's the Eyes Wide Shut crowd that's running everything, and they can run things with force. They are above the law, and that's one of the challenges, one of the problems, one of the conundrums that needs to be discussed. Rather than just blame Congress or blame the courts, we need to look at that. We also need to look at the black budget. I was amazed in my travels how few people understand what the black budget is. One of the exciting things about the Breakthrough Energy Conference is I finally got to meet Richard Dolan in person. Richard's a very talented author and publisher who we've had on the Salieri Report. He's the gentleman who coined, he's the scholar, I should say, who coined the term breakaway civilization that Dr. Farrell and I use, and use a lot. And he's got a new book. I'm looking forward to reading it, and I'm going to, as soon as we have it, we'll have it up on the blog, and I'll be interviewing him again on the Salieri Report. But Richard was saying, I was talking with him and Foster Gamble at one point, and he was saying, you know, he was apologizing for his work was so controversial. And I said, Richard, you know, if you're never guilty of material omissions, and that's the problem that is bedeviling us these days. What all this means is the government is not our friend, and government does not represent us. We can't depend on government for anything. That doesn't mean that we don't try and get back some of the money that government owes us or make good on some of the promises that government has made to us. But it means we need not depend on the government. And if we trust the government, we do so at our own risk. The market's response to the temporary deals on the debt ceiling and a reprieve on the budget was a sign of relief. Everything had been going down, stocks, bonds, gold, commodities. Now everything is going up. It's almost like financial assets have become balloons that central banks and governments inflate or deflate. And that's, of course, the problem when so much of your financial resources are controlled and organized by sort of central systems run by governments. The North American stock markets continued up with the S&P closing today at 1733. Looks like it's got a little bit more room to run, and the emerging market equities turned up with them. More on that next week when I'm going to be joined on the Salieri Report by Chuck Gibson to discuss Emerging Markets 101. Very, very interesting discussion. That will be, you don't want to miss it. Gold held the 1270 line last week. It looked briefly like it wouldn't when it breached 1270. It's risen above 1300 now, and it closed today at 1390. 19 precious metals continues to look extremely weak. I'm watching again to see if the primary trend reasserts between now and March. Until it does, we have to question whether or not a bear market has begun. No one can say, but think about what your core position is in precious metals. Core position is what you hold as insurance for the worst case versus an investment position. If we have a strong November and December, which is traditionally a good time for gold in particular, it's not a bad time to prune investment positions. More on that with Franklin Sanders in November, when we'll be doing the precious metals market report in the second week. There are a number of interesting items up on the blog that I wanted to point out. One is the SEC announced plans to vote next week on the crowdfunding rules. That's going to be very big. If they proceed as promised under the Job Act, they're going to be permitting solicitation of investors who are not accredited investors in combination with what's going on in social media, that's going to be a very, that change could rock our world. The other thing is, I put up an announcement about the Going Organic magazine, a wonderful new magazine started by dear, dear friends in Palm Springs. And I have, I'm publishing an article in each Going Organic magazine. And this this month, it's on crowdfunding to help kickstart entrepreneurs building local fresh food systems. If you look at what's going on with health insurance, it's almost a better use of our money to finance fresh food entrepreneurs and fresh food farms than wasting it on insurance. We'd probably be statistically better off, although I'm sure there are always going to be individual cases where we weren't, and those will be flagged and held up in the media. Another announcement of Dr. Farrell has two new books out that I'm reading, I wanted to make sure you were aware of that before I finished. I will be doing reviews. Great transcripts up. We have the third quarter wrap-up transcript up, and the 3D printing should go up by, I would expect, the end of the day tomorrow. The crowdfunding transcript is up, but we're reworking it into a pamphlet, so look for that to be done in a week or so. That ought to be a good one. Big concern, more trouble at Fukushima. The typhoon that hit that area caused more radiation leaks. I continue to keep an eye on Fukushima and to be extremely concerned. I think Fukushima is one of the most important risks we're all watching. Our hero this week is Chris Cox. He's the one-man militia from South Carolina who took it upon himself to head north and start to clean up around the Lincoln Memorial when the government shut down to make sure that the Lincoln Memorial was in good shape when the vets came. Let me just read you his quote. "It's us to us at the end of the day. The citizens are the stewards of the memorials. I'd like to encourage all Americans to come forth and to find a memorial to bring a trash bag and a rake." I love that. It's quite amazing what happens when every one of us does what we can. There's the reason I wanted to use our theme tonight of helping each other come clean over the fiscal cliff is if we're really on our own, then the solutions are start to really help each other. Help each other stay healthy, help each other learn how to provide more of our own health care for ourselves, on and on and on. I live in a farming community, and I'm always struck at how in a farming community, people go to great lengths to help each other and lift each other up and support each other. It's very different than an economy that is very dependent on government money, where everybody's very much doing their own things and there's remarkable lack of sort of collaborative support. And that's part of the transition. If we're going to leave the government behind, we're going to have to go back to those old-timey cultures where we really help and support each other. So, Chris Cox is a very good example, I think, of that culture. So, Chris Cox, thank you for being our hero. Ask Catherine. "Hi, Catherine. I was wondering if you could comment on the dollar in your market segment. There are currency historians that believe with an 80% chance that the dollar will remain the reserve currency for at least another 20 years. A Chinese spokesperson commented that the yuan couldn't possibly replace the dollar's reserve currency for at least 25 to 40 years. If the dollar will remain the reserve currency for another one or two generations, this is going to affect all of our investments in the way we invest, especially precious metals. Where do you think the dollar is going in the next 5 to 30 years?" Great question, and that question very much relates to what is the governance system, who's running things, and where do they want to go. I think they really do want to go to a global currency, and I think they really do want to have a digital currency. What's going to be very interesting to watch is the negotiations between the European Union and the United States over this so-called trade agreement and what that might do to a currency. One of the things we're seeing globally, as I talked about during the wrap-up, and I think I talked about it last week, is this effort to get everybody who's not in the central banking warfare model or in the central banking system in. So we targeted Afghanistan, we targeted Iraq, Syria, Libya. You know, the outliers now are Iran and North Korea. If they get those into the central banking system, watch out. You're going to start to see a lot of change accelerate. And of course, we know that Putin has is sort of the stinker in the game, trying to help those outliers stay out, because the if you look at the different players among the BRIC nations who are not in the G7, so the G13, many of those have a vested interest in the Anglo-American alliance not getting the central control that would happen once and if everybody gets in the central banking sort of model system. So will the dollar remain the reserve currency for the next 20 to 40 years? Very possibly. There's no other contender even close. And a lot of this comes down to the question of military. At the Casey conference, there were several people who said that the Chinese were close to being able to provide the reserve currency. That's ridiculous. The Chinese just launched their first aircraft carrier. You know, to have a reserve currency, you have to control the sea lanes, you have to control the satellite lanes, you have to literally be the dominant military force, because there's an absolute relationship. That's why I call it the central banking warfare model. The central banks can't print money unless the warfare machine makes sure everybody accepts it. That's what ultimately provides the liquidity and the enforcement. So I absolutely think the dollar is going to go as long as the people who are centralizing want it to go. Do they want to replace it with something else? I'm not sure, but I think they certainly want a digital currency. They want to take the reserve currency to a very invasive digital model, and that's what we have to watch for. Not so much what the name of the currency is. So do I think the dollar is going to go for quite some time? Yes. And I think the dollar is probably going to be very strong. It's interesting to be around the people who think the dollar is about to collapse and is certain to collapse. I don't begin to understand what the basis of their analysis is, other than they're looking at the legacy systems, which is a piece of the game. They're not looking at the whole game. And that's why I would encourage you to go back and watch Just a Taste that we did for this week. What about Puerto Rico? Will it go restructure, knock on for the muni markets? Is that part of the collapse you describe? $80 billion for a 4 million population. Many federal subsidies. Who ended up with those funds? Good question. I have never looked closely at Puerto Rico. Based on what I knew in Wall Street, it was a place to be avoided. I suspect a lot of that money has gone down the black budget. How they're going to restructure, I have no idea. I will check around and see if I can sort of get a take on Puerto Rico, but it's one of those municipal situations that's in big trouble, and it's only going to be able to sort of grind its way through if the federal budget carries it through. If not, you could get a real mess. But I don't know what's happening. I'll make an effort to take a look and see if I can find out. Looks like the head of the group that won the Nobel Prize for chemical weapons destruction was forced out by Bush because he was insisted that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Very good thing to point out. Thank you to Janine. We've put that up in Top Picks on the blog. I love it. I love how subscribers send us some of the greatest finds. Our interview this week is John Rappaport, talking about the sort of deeper reality of Obamacare. Our post about that Salieri report brought forth some very interesting comments. I would really encourage you to read them up on the blog. They inspired me to write short commentary on the blog. Let me read it to you. The announcement of a bipartisan deal to open the government and keep the debt issuance humming along is a reprieve from the dark dawning on millions of Americans that the endgame is upon us. If you are a Salieri Report subscriber, check out the comments to this week's Salieri Report blog post. Highly responsible Americans are now learning the facts of what will happen as Obamacare is applied to their particular situation. No platitudes, just the ugly truth. More people without health care, more taxes in a sneaky form, doctors leaving the field. For many people who pay the high prices instead of the tax for not participating, they will also discover when the time comes to use the policies, the procedures they need will probably not be covered. There will be problems, excuses, and the experiences will be gruesome and depressing. The president announced today that he wanted to get accomplished by the end of the year, what he wanted to get accomplished by the end of the year, including immigration reform. One of the things that will be buried in the immigration reform will be provisions to grandfather foreign students into residency and citizenship. These will be entrepreneurs who will help kickstart a new wave of innovation in the crowdfunding revolution. If you want healthcare, best to focus on building in the new part of the economy that is growing so you can afford services purchased for cash. In that model, your best investment is on preventative efforts, first and foremost, fresh food and water. Step one is to start helping each other figure out how to build pathways to stay healthy in these times. We're going to have to get creative. We are on our own. Okay, I just wanted to read you a couple of the comments because they're very, very appropriate. One from Marilyn. Since 1957, the American Veterinarian Association has provided health care for its 35,000 members, beginning as soon as a student enters veterinary school through retirement. Now with Obamacare, the association is forced to discontinue this service, so they decided to set up a private exchange for their members. Their private exchange has been up and running since spring 2013, but since Obama and HHS keep changing the mandatory policy everyone must buy, they still cannot get any insurance to lock in insurance company to lock in a firm price and sell a policy on their exchange. This is like a car dealer building a beautiful new store to sell new cars, but with no product to put in the showroom because the government keeps outlawing all the new cars as they come off the assembly line. Instead of reducing the people who are uninsured, it looks like Obamacare just increased the number of uninsured by 35,000. My 30-year-old son being one of them. When he goes to the federal exchange, he is put into Medicaid since he is in his last year of vet school and does not have an income. He does not want to be in Medicaid because taking 25 hours in vet school each term does not give him all day to wait in line for treatment. The cliff he is worried about arrives on December 31, 2013, when after that he will be in a free fall without health care for the first time in his life. What can he do to get treatment when he needs it without breaking the law? And then from another subscriber who I've met, wonderful subscriber who I met at a lunch in Marin County. I've been enrolled in a Kaiser plan with a $5,000 deductible for 3 years. After the deductible is met, I'm covered 100%. The cost was $297 a month. I also have an HSA, so figured I was pretty much set. A couple of weeks ago, I got a notice from Kaiser indicating that my new plan, which would comply with ACA, would have a $5,000 deductible, and after that is met, I would be responsible for 40% of healthcare costs. The new plan will cost $595 a month. I can apply for government assistance based on 2012 income and pay $330 a month. That was a bad year for our business, and our income was lower than usual. But if our income increases greatly this year, and I believe it will, we will be liable for the difference and have no idea what that will be at this point. It could be up to $800 a month. Since the only alternative covered California gave me was a silver plan that without government assistance would cover $800 a month, would cost $800 a month. So I'm either going to have to do without insurance or find some alternative. Basically, ACA priced me out of health insurance. Then there are two posts from a wonderful doctor who's thinking of leaving the field for the basic reason that, you know, this system is now going to force him to act in ways which he feels, he refers to the immorality of the system. I couldn't agree more. He's not the first doctor who's told me in the last month that he's leaving the profession. In fact, there are several doctors who've told me that there's no way they can function under the new system. So the reality is Obamacare is going to force many of us much further away from traditional systems, and that's why it's increasingly important that we really take the attitude that we need to help each other in this. I'll just talk very personally because these are very personal decisions. My decision during the litigation was that it was not safe for me to use traditional health care in any way. I finally gave up trying to get and maintain insurance for a variety of reasons, one of which I did not want my data in the system. I didn't think it was safe to have my data in the system at the time. And so I ended up making a command decision to just live without healthcare insurance. Off and on, we've looked at doing an HSA for Solari, and I suspect we probably will. But if you look at increasingly the money spent on healthcare by me and the people around me or the people in my network, a lot of it's not covered by insurance. And so there's a real economic question of, do I spend the money for preventative healthcare and for fresh food and the kind of things that keep me healthy, or do I spend the money on insurance? So I have no intention of doing anything under Obamacare. I will pay the penalty for not getting it. I continue to use Samaritan Ministries, which is a co-op, the equivalent of a co-op for Christians who underwrite each other. And I continue to use something I recommend highly, AAA insurance for needs if I have a car accident. Because the one time I am very likely to seek traditional medicine or Western medicine is in the case of a trauma accident or a transportation accident. That's likely to be car, since I do so much driving. Okay, well, that's it for the interview. It's another one of the these great Rappaports. We get very wide feedback on the John Rappaport commentary. You either love him or you hate him, but I love it when he goes into the sort of the deeper story on many of these things, and I think he does a good job of sort of peeling back the veil and really looking at some of the deeper things going on behind Obamacare. Okay, in closing, next week we have Chuck Gibson with our quarterly equity overview. We're going to be looking at emerging markets. We call it Emerging Markets 101. There's been amazing divergence this year between the price-earnings ratio and valuations in the North American markets versus emerging markets. We'll be talking about that. Lots of opportunities that are going to be in the emerging markets over the next couple of years. I don't necessarily underestimate how much time it's going to take to get there, because as I've said before, and I said it in the wrap-up, I think G7 is going to do a lot, has done a lot this year, and will do a lot next year to draw the capital back to headquarters. So the developed worlds are going to be, or the developed markets are going to be very picky about demanding their capital back, and that could make things rough for the emerging markets. But the growth story in the emerging markets is very, very compelling. And they don't have a lot of debt. Then October 31st, on Halloween, I'll be talking finally my report on the zombie phenomena. So we'll be talking about zombies. November 7th, we'll have Joseph Farrell for Coming Clean. Again, Dr. Farrell has kindly agreed to do a quarterly report on the Salier Report, which I'm very excited about. And then, of course, Franklin Sanders back on the second week of November for the Precious Metals Market Report. Lots to talk about. So until next week with Chuck Gibson on Emerging Markets 101, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.